Ron and Anian.
And there's a Hyundai in the parking lot that had been dropped off the night before, and we tucked it away inside, you know, behind the fence before we left for the night, and it was running. But I couldn't believe it. I just had to find out for myself. But there's some things in this world you just can't explain.
Some things in this world you just can't explain.
The car doctor.
The customer came in about 4:30 to pick it up, and he was all apologetic. Well, I forgot. I have my car set to automatically start through my cell phone every day at 7:30 before I go to work, so it's warmed up by the time I get in the car 10 minutes later. And he said, I bet it started this morning and freaked you guys out. Yeah, that would be a good way to express it.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the car doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, how was your week? Well, I just absolutely had a great week. Fun week at the shop fixing cars, and as always, and just glad to be here with you this hour and next hour, and just say thanks. I'm glad you're here. Tony stopped in this week, and, you know, new customers are always interesting, right? It's I don't know. I don't know if they're getting used to me or I'm getting used to them or what the relationship is or how it begins, but it's just well, the story goes like this. So Tony stopped in probably 2 weeks ago telling me that his air conditioning had a problem. He walks past the shop every day, and he walked in and he said, you know, he says, I like this place already. It doesn't look like an auto repair shop, and you keep it so neat and clean. He said, I just have to try you once. You know, I've lived in town forever, and I always hear good things. And sure, come on in. I'm glad to have you. My air conditioning doesn't work. It's intermittent. It's some days it works, some days it doesn't. And nobody seems to be able to figure it out because they never see the problem when it happens. Huh. Okay. Well, you know, it's a 2016 GMC Acadia. I said, you know, listen, I'll write it up. I'll do a diagnostic to it. I'll put it through its paces. And I said, I if it doesn't do it, if I can't see the problem, you know, maybe I can't fix it yet. I said, I'll fix it eventually, but I've got to catch it in the act. I said, but I will tell you this, you know, a diagnostic isn't necessarily what's broken. A diagnostic is also going to encompass what's good. I'll be able to tell you, here's what's good. And the more we know that's good, the less likely the problem can be. And eventually you get to it, right? That sounds good. Put me in, put him in the book. He drops it off Tuesday this week. I write him up. An air conditioning diagnosis is a strange diagnosis. You know, how do you write that up? Do you put down 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, half a day? How much refrigerant? I have a can job in the system, and I think it's like $250. It's 16 ounces of refrigerant, about an hour and a half of time, just not knowing where and what is going to encompass. And during the course of that, I'll service the air conditioning, recover, measure refrigerant, leak check it, add the dye. You know, you kind of put it through its paces. It's like sending the guy out to the house, but it's a smaller system, and it's got four wheels and an engine instead of this big bulky house unit. And I go through the paces, and when he dropped it off that morning, he said, yep, it's not working. Okay, good. I'm going to see a problem. Yay. And I get into it, and I go through the drill. All right, I verify it. It's working. And I check it, and it's okay. It's, you know, duct temperature is about 48 degrees. It's like 68, 70 degrees outside. It's not a huge heat load. System pressures read normal. I've got no problem there. I scanned it. And I pulled out the big gun right away. I pulled out my Opus IVS powered by Drew Technology because I wanted to get to the heart of this matter. I wanted to see just what's going on with this car. And I went through every module. I did a quick test. The Opus IVS does a quick test, and it goes through every module, records everything. And the really neat thing is it records freeze frame data. You know, if there's a fault in the system, it will take a video snapshot with very detailed line by line. It's like reading through computer code. You're reading all this information. It just takes a while. It'll take you 15 minutes sometimes to read through all the information to get, you know, what you want to get. called up tech support, put a call into the tech support center. I talked to Harris, who turned out to be in California, a mechanic from New Jersey. We had a great time talking about East Rutherford, Balavia Buick down in East Rutherford, I think the name of it was, where he worked, and talked about, you know, New Jersey bagels and pizza. What else would a couple of Jersey boys talk about but the food, right? And, you know, we came to the conclusion that, you know, we're doing everything we can do. There was nothing else there. Called up Tony towards the end of the day, middle of the afternoon. Tony, your car's as done as I can make it. I can tell you what it's not, but I can't tell you what it is. The air conditioning's working. He's like, really? I said, yeah, it's really working. So he shows up to pick the car up, and I go over it with him at the counter. I go over the bulletins. I show him the pages of data from the Opus IVS tool, and he's really thoroughly impressed. He says, you know, he goes, listen, you didn't fix it. He goes, but what a great first experience. I said, well, first dates are always important. They lay the groundwork for the future, and, you know, are we going to get along? Are we going to see eye to eye? You know, where's the relationship going? Because auto repair really is about the relationship. And then I said, let me just take you outside. I want to turn on the air conditioning. I want to just make sure you recognize when the compressor comes on. I want you to hear that click. And I want to talk a little bit about ambient air temperature, because this time of year in New Jersey is weird. One morning it's 35 degrees, the next day it's 65 degrees. And compressors do funny things. A lot of the manufacturers, GM among them, they'll limit air compressor, AC compressor on time based on ambient air temperature and, you know, how long it takes to come on and delay and so forth. And ambient air temp sensors that are off scale by a couple of degrees will make a difference. Go outside, I show them the ambient air temp icon, and there it is, and that's what that means. And he says, okay. And I said, and here's how you turn the AC on. And I turn the AC on, and he hears click, and he says, okay, that's the compressor. I said, yep, that's the compressor. I said, so that's the sound you're looking for. That's what you want to hear every time the air comes on. And he said, okay, I understand that. He says, but I have one question. Okay. He said, and understand, to turn the AC on this car, you have to push the button and turn the fan on. So I turned the fan on. I pushed the button, turned the fan on, and the yellow light comes on for the AC button. And he goes to me, what does that yellow light mean? And it was like, and I explained to him, I said, you know, Tony, that means that you've turned on the AC compressor. He goes, oh, that's what the yellow light's for. It was like Jesus had come down and he was walking on water.
What does a yellow light mean? Slow down. Okay. What? Slow down. Okay.
And that was the exchange. It really was. It was like, I never dreamed 35 years ago when I watched that episode on Taxi that I would be talking about that on a nationally syndicated radio show, because I had that experience. He never knew what that yellow light meant. Nobody. And I asked him, I said, Tony, did you just buy the car? No, I've had it for 5 years. Well, what do you mean you've had it for 5 years? He says, I've had it for 5 years. I haven't been able to get the air conditioning working for the past since I got the car new. Nobody could ever tell me what was wrong with it. He says, as a matter of fact, my wife owns a Nissan. My wife and I would fight all the time because she wouldn't want to go out in my car because the air conditioning doesn't work. And, you know, her Nissan works so much better. He said, boy, wait till my wife hears this story. Now we're going to finally get along. I'm like, look at this. Fixed the car, solved a marital problem. What else can I do this week? I was stunned. He was stunned. I was stunned. What does that yellow light mean? You know, it really comes back to basics, right? You've just got to look at the problem in its simplest and purest form. What does it do? How does it work? What's it looking for? How is it supposed to operate? And each and every time I fix something, that's what it comes down to. It's no magic. It's no mumbo jumbo. It's no hocus pocus. What does that yellow light mean? That'll live with me for a while. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. I'm here at 855-560-9900. I'll be back right after this. Don't go away.
What's more fun than listening to Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor and getting that car fixed right? 855-560-9900. Give Ron a call. Now, back to Ron.
Hey, let's get over to Gary in Tennessee and see what's going on. Gary, you're on with the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Hey, Dr. Ron, how
good,
are
sir.
You doing?
Good, sir. What's going on?
Good. I've got a 99 Dodge Ram truck, and the yellow ABS light and the red brake light on the dash keeps coming up.
Okay.
And it's not the speed sensor.
How do you know?
Replaced it.
Well, which one? There's more than one.
The one above the, well, just the one, well, the one above the rear differential.
Okay. Have you scanned for codes?
No codes.
Okay. So when the fault occurs, what, the red ABS?
It stays on when the truck's on.
Okay. So let's think of it like this. You've scanned it, you have no fault codes, but you've got two lights on. What if the system's what if the system's broken? It can't recognize a fault. All right. What if so?
Okay.
My conversation would be: unplug one of the wheel speed sensors. Is this rear wheel ABS or four wheel ABS?
Four wheel.
Four wheel. Unplug a wheel speed sensor. If you unplug a wheel speed sensor, pick one, anyone. All right. It should set a fault code for that channel. Correct.
Correct.
And if it doesn't, either your tool's broken or there's something more serious wrong with the vehicle that it doesn't recognize its own faults, and that's a different conversation. Let's prove that the vehicle's smart enough let's prove the vehicle's smart enough to tell us what's wrong with it.
Could that possibly be the ABS module? I've heard they're bad on that year truck to go out.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. Sure, it's also 21 years old now. But before we go down that road in the expense, unless you're going to find something used, but anything used is still going to be 21 years old, and there's likely programming involved. You know, let's. It's a simple enough test, right? What kind of scan tool are you using?
It was just a normal OBD2. I don't know the manufacturer.
Okay. Well, now keep this in mind. All right. Does your scan tool allow you to go into the ABS module? Does it say that specifically? Or you're just logging in, running an OBD2 scan, and you see no codes?
Correct. Yeah. I don't go into the ABS.
Okay. How many languages do you speak, Gary?
Well, English, I guess.
Okay. One, right? So cars, yeah. Anything made since 96, speak two languages, OBD2, which is emissions only, all right? That's all the law allows. Mm-hmm. That's all the law requires. It'll display any fault with emissions relations, and then the vehicle manufacturer language. If your truck had a bad oxygen sensor, do you think that would affect emissions?
Yes.
Right. So that would set an OBD2 code, correct?
Mm-hmm.
If it had an ABS fault, does that necessarily affect emissions?
No.
So it's not going to have access to that module. Here's a trick one for you. If your vehicle has an air conditioning problem, do you think it'll set an OBD2 code? The answer is maybe. Because what happens with air conditioning, right? Air conditioning is a load on the engine. The computer has to know whether or not Gary wants AC. It will change its idle strategy. Remember on older vehicles with carburetors that you had an idle up solenoid when the AC came on to bump the idle up a little bit?
No, that was before my time.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. You sound older. I'm sorry, brother.
See, I just sound more mature.
I remember that, okay? You know, there was always an idle-up solenoid, all right? And, you know, same thing with your truck. Your truck has to compensate for it. So in some cases, an air conditioning fault will turn on a check engine light and an OBD2 fault. So got to get a scan tool that will scan for faults specifically at ABS. Now, I will say this. Chrysler's a little tough. Depending upon the level of scan tool, you may not be able to get into that ABS module. So try and find something fairly advanced as close to dealer level as your wallet will afford. All right? If you take it down to a local auto parts store and they do an OBD2 scan, you're never going to see that ABS fault. That won't work. All right? No fault of theirs. They just may not understand what it is you're looking for. So forget what I originally said. Until you get an ABS module scan, don't assume that there's something wrong with the vehicle that it can't display the information. Let's get an ABS module scan and start the war from there. It's becoming more common in the shop. Every vehicle that comes in, when I hook up a tool now, regardless of what it is, I will run a complete module scan. I want to look at every module on the vehicle. The newer the vehicle, the more information, and the greater the potential to find a problem before it becomes a bigger one. So it's just something we're all going to have to get used to going forward. All right? Do me a favor. Get an ABS module scan and then call me back. Would you do that?
I will. Okay. Sounds good.
All right. You take good care. Thank you. You're very welcome. Let's get over and talk to Renee in Warwick, New York, and see what's going on here. Renee, welcome to the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Hi, it's Renee, actually.
Oh, but, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Love your show. Learned a lot from you.
Thank you.
I know you were talking about the future of electric cars and going electric, and I just had a couple of questions because I haven't really looked up anything about the car since I can't afford to get one anyway, and I don't think it's a good idea. But if I were to go from here to Buffalo, how many stops would I have to make to recharge?
Right.
And who pays for that? Would I be paying for it at each charging station? And ultimately, all this electricity has to come from somewhere. So that's my main problem.
Right. So let me ask you a couple of questions, and they're all valid points, Renee. They really are. I'll take it one step further, and I've been saying this for a while. You travel into New York City, you go through the Lincoln Tunnel, all right, and you're stuck in traffic, and you've got your elderly mother in the car, and you've got to run the air conditioning, and you've got a half hour's worth of electricity going into the city because you figured, when I get to the restaurant to eat, I'll just charge up there because we're going to have charging stations everywhere, right? That's what they're telling us. We're going to have charging stations everywhere. There won't be a problem. Are they going to run extension cords down the Lincoln Tunnel when you're sitting in traffic with the air on for an hour? Are they not going to let you in the tunnel? Are you going to charge your vehicle on the Jersey side or the New York side if you're trying to get out? You know, the answer to the question about going to Buffalo is, well, it depends. Right now, I think the average electric car, I think the range is 250 to 300 miles. So, chances are you could get to Buffalo from Warwick, New York. It's going one way, and then you got to charge up there somewhere. My understanding is that the charging stations, for example, if you're staying at a hotel, that's just absorbed by the hotel, or the public utilities are just putting the stations up and charging for free because I guess they're trying to promote the idea. And I'm saying that sort of guessing, but my feeling is if the public utility is providing it for free, we're those gasoline car driving people. We're the ones paying for it. So, all valid questions, kiddo. I don't have all the answers yet, and I don't know if anybody else does. We'll keep you informed as we hear them. We'll be sure to put them out here. I appreciate the call. Thanks, Renee, and you be well. I'm Ron Anani and the Car Doctor. I'll return right after this. Real quick, because I got an email during the pause from a listener who wanted to know more about Opus IVS. You want to get out to the opusivs.com website, opusivs.com, and there they'll talk about Drew Technology and everything else that the way they're revolutionizing the industry does. So opusivs.com, that's number one. Number two, then I had an email during the week. I'm just trying to do a quick bunch of things here. Everybody wants to know about the Toyota Prius battery update. Well, that's a great story, all right? We talked about it here on air, and through the help of some contacts at Toyota and a couple of personal friends that are in the business at Toyota, they went and did some research for me, and they came up with an obscure bulletin from 15 years ago that talks about Toyota recognizes that, and this is maybe the reason why the battery is so hard to get for that particular vehicle, that there was a bulletin that talked about if your 01, 02 Prius has a hard time starting, cranking, and so on, Toyota has come out with an updated battery or a different battery. And actually what it was an install kit that allowed the battery to be replaced with an 04 Prius battery with a different bracket to hold it down. It was a kit available from Toyota. Next day, ordered it up, picked it up, and put it in the car. The car is gone. And wouldn't you know it, 4 days later, the battery that was never supposed to be available, Toyota calls me and said, hey, your battery came in from Japan. Do you still want it? Nah, I think I'll pass. So if anybody needs to buy a Toyota battery for their 01 Prius, I know where it is. It's probably the only one in the country, but I got a feeling it's going to be there a while. So the Prius is solved. I want to thank everybody that reached out, the folks from Toyota, and all you listeners and everybody on Facebook that wrote in with suggestions and ideas. I looked at each and every one of them, and we were very grateful. And for the record, the owner is very grateful, too, because she's got her car back. And one last thing, Tom, real quick. You know, we keep talking about electric cars. I'm going to keep driving this point home, all right? Anybody can come on here and talk about electric cars. Pro or con, we're not trying to present a pro or con position. We're really not. We're just trying to call the facts like we see them. We're trying to say, hey, does this make sense? Doesn't it make sense? If someone's got somebody that's pro electric car and wants to come up here with facts, you can't make it up. There's an open mic just waiting for you. And if anybody has a direct link, let's throw it out there. Elon Musk. Let's go right to the big fish. We'd be glad to talk to Mr. Musk and see his view and see what he's got in his mind for the electric car future of America. That being said, let's get over to the phones. Let's get over to Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob, up there in Binghamton, New York, 2000 Cavalier. Yes, Bob, how can I help?
Yes, hi. Hi. Ron. I've been listening to you. I believe it was you many, many years ago. When you were on our, station, which was very highly technical. But I'm so glad to have, back on our network. But the question I wanted to ask you, there was two different cars. One is a 2000 Chevy Cavalier, 2.2 liter, and that the fuel pressure sending unit vacuum type valve canister that's very hard to get at.
Are you talking about the canister vent valve in the back of the car, Bob?
Yes.
It controls the charcoal canister?
Yes, it controls that, yeah, but it controls, one of the idiot lights.
Right. So you've got to. Are you trying to tell me you've got a check engine light on and you're setting an EVAP fault code?
Right. Yes.
Do you know what the code is? 442, 446, 452, 456?
I don't have that present. That was actually my kind of secondary question. But yes, it all indicates to that because I have run smoke tests.
Okay.
And that I do not have, any leaks from the smoke tests. I have fixed, everything like that from the, fuel, inlet pipe.
Okay. Let me ask you this, Bob.
Yes.
When you run the smoke test, how do you close the vent valve?
I just connect the vent valve through the port up at the engine,
How do you close the vent valve on the canister?
I don't have a way of controlling that on or off.
Okay.
I've been out of the business long enough that I don't have the controls where I can actually exercise the switching on that canister.
Okay, so hang on a second here.
I was wondering if there was a shortcut way of testing that canister.
So hang on a second here, Bob. So listen to what I say. If you put smoke through that system, all right, and you have no leaks, and you're not manually closing the vent valve either by scan tool or applying a power and grounding the solenoid to electrically close it. If you have no leaks when you smoke the system, you're either not allowing smoke to reach the back of the vehicle to the vent valve, or the vent valve is bad. A vent valve is normally open when the vehicle is off. If the vent valve wasn't open when the vehicle is off, it wouldn't release pressure in the system. It has to be it's filtered through the charcoal canister, but it wouldn't allow pressure to release through the system, and the gas tank would, well, not explode, but it would just build up excess pressure, and somewhere along the way, something's going to pop. So if your question is, how do you test the vent valve? My first question to you is, you need a scan tool or, you know, power and ground and that stuff. My question to you is, how will you control it to be able to test it? I want to make sure you're doing the smoke test right. Does that make sense to you?
Yes. And that I'm just saying that, you know, I've been retired from the, you know, repair shop business for, you know, 20 years.
Okay.
So that's passed. My scan tools that I have don't get me to the level where I can actually observe it on the scope and switch it on and off.
Okay, do this
and
then.
That's why.
Do this then, all right? Now, you'll need a lift. Do you have access to a lift?
No, I'm totally out. I have to do a, you know, garage, shade tree mechanical work.
Okay, so you're tapping smoke in where? At the test port up front?
Yes.
All right. The green cap or the blue cap?
Oh, jeez.
Well, what color is the cap of the test port that you're taking apart? Or are you coming in through the purge valve?
I was coming in through up front under the engine, you know, in compartment and putting that into the port.
Okay. You've got to know, first of all, you've got to know which port you're going into. Not every line up there leads back to the gas tank. You know, you want to look for the purge valve. It's usually signified by a green test port with a Schrader in it. You would take the Schrader out. It has reverse threads on it. And you want to apply smoke using an adapter. If you're doing that and the vehicle doesn't emit smoke from the rear, that means the line is restricted somehow all the way back, which I've never really seen, or the canister is saturated, which is possible, and it's blocking smoke, or the vent valve has mechanically failed. Make sure you're doing the smoke test correct first. Make sure you're going into the right test port, and it may be beyond your means. You do need a lift. It's nice to have a lift to get it up in the air and take a look. And then you can kind of run that test accurately. Do that, and then give me a shout back. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. We'll return right after this. Welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, here at 855-560-9900. You know, just real quick, an esoteric thought. Big word there, right, Tom? Esoteric. I'm not sure what it means, but it sounds good for the moment.
Where'd you learn the big word?
Well, I read it sometimes, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
You can read?
I've been known to read. I have to read. So,
excellent.
If I can't read, then I can't fix cars because I can't find the shop. I have to look for the 59 on the side of the building. So
You can't find the shop when you get in the car and drive there. Come on.
Well, that's, you know, sometimes finding the shop is half the challenge. I'm on autopilot. Listen, I got news for you. I go out the end of the street. I make a right, a left, two rights, and a left, and I'm there. Sometimes I do it. I go for milk, and I end up in Waldwick, and I'm not supposed to be there because it's just autopilot. You know, it's just... I was thinking the other day with technology and the advent of everything that's going on and how cars are changing. You know, you think about the things that everybody says to you. You know, my dad taught me this or my mom taught me this about cars. You don't hear that as much anymore, do you? Because it doesn't really apply. Does that mean the next generation of people that operate a transportation device, which is what they're going to be, not just cars, they won't be able to say, well, mom told me when the electric car does this, this is what I need to do, right? We're going to lose all that. All that, all those memories of mom and dad just won't exist. I don't know. I'm rambling. I'm just thinking of how it's going to change society. It's going to be such a societal impact. Societal, there's another big word. Let's get over to Dan in Wisconsin, see what kind of big words we can use on him. Dan, you ready? I've got my vocabulary all set up. Ron Ananian at your service, sir.
Yes, Ron.
Yes, sir.
I have a 2004 Chevy Impala sedan, 3.4 liter engine. Had it parked over the winter, it appears that squirrels got under the hood and chewed off about a 3-inch section of a wire harness located by the driver's side wheel well.
Okay.
About 12 wires in that bundle, and they're similar colors, like there's 4 greens and 4 purples.
Oh, boy.
Some whites and pinks. Yeah, so I don't know which ones go to which if I tried to even patch them together. That bundle goes into, you know, it's in a plastic conduit. That goes into some other, down towards the lower part of the motor, goes in some other bundles, and then I don't know where it all goes from there.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to, you know, figure out any options. You know, I imagine they just have to take the whole thing apart, and there's, I don't know if it's all one bundle. It had a label on it of a 0344, that bundle did.
But they ate most of, they ate most of the label too, right?
Yes, part of it.
Yeah.
And then down below there was one that has a 01344 and then 0344,
yeah,
where it kind of goes into. But
and all that stuff is engineering numbers, Dan, and assembly line numbers. They won't mean anything to us or to the shop. Well, you know, a couple of thoughts. Number one, have you talked to your insurance company?
No, I have not. I talked to them about towing in case I had to tow it to a shop, but I
right.
did not talk to them about,
did you,
about the
did,
actual...
Did you tell them why?
I did, but I guess I never asked them, you know, would they cover it or whatever.
You know, because I've seen, I don't claim to know auto insurance or homeowners insurance, and I surely don't know it for every state in the union, but, you know, I have heard cases where either under homeowners or automobile coverage, one or the other, sometimes damage like that where animals come in and chew up the wiring harness is covered. So it might pay to ask. You know, there might be a deductible, but listen, all they can do is say no. You know, that's number one. Number two, it's got to get to a shop to allow them to sort it out. It may be that they can buy a short bundle. Maybe it's a short harness leading up to the convenience center. There's a convenience fuse block, I think, on the left side of the engine compartment. And they might be able to buy just that short fuse assembly, just that short harness assembly. And they can take it from there. But I would tell you to have a professional look at it. Don't try doing it yourself. Wiring has to be precise. And for the future, Honda makes something called rodent tape. It's laced with pepper. You can lace some of the wiring harness with that. Available on Amazon, available at your local Honda dealer, rodent tape. And it'll prevent it from happening again. It puts black pepper right on the tape. Good luck to you, Dan. I appreciate what you're trying to do, and I'm sorry to hear it. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. I'm back right after this. One of the things you have to accept in auto repair is that change is always ongoing, and it's a constant. It's always there. We had a 2013 GMC pickup truck, 2500 HD with a 6.6 diesel in the shop this week, and the check engine light had come on, and scanned it, and it was setting a P0128, which maybe you've had this fault. It's pretty common. It talks about, a P0128 talks about range performance, how that vehicle responds from the moment it starts until it hits operating temperature, how fast the rate of rise. I always akin it and compare it to when the heating guy comes out to the house and they talk about rate of rise, you know, how effective is the heating system, is the baseboard laid out right, is it working properly, is the hot air ducts doing what they're supposed to do, and so on. Rate of rise and overall performance. Well, the kicker on this 2013 GMC is It's not one thermostat because I verified it. It never went over 161 degrees. And spec, according to the motorrad.com website, is 180, and 185 is where the stats start to open. Yeah, you, and that's why I wanted to mention this, right? We talk about how things evolve and change because we don't realize that, you know, there's always one thermostat. Uh-uh. A 2013 GMC, like a lot of the 6.6 diesels, has two thermostats. And the customer didn't believe me at first. I took him out to motorrad.com. I showed him the kit. Here's the two thermostats. The nice thing about the Motorrad website is they show you the thermostat specifications. They show you a picture of the stat. You know what it looks like. Sold the job, went well. Motorrad.com. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor, reminding you this time till the next time, like every time, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.